and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer, Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Jesse Bell, filling in for Dinah Jansen this week. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, and it covers Kingston Council's appeal to the provincial government to address the impact that heritage designations have on insurance rates.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. Kingston City Council is calling on the provincial government to investigate why some insurance companies are raising premiums or denying coverage for heritage-designated properties, despite provincial guidelines stating otherwise. The motion brought forward by Councillor Gary Osterhoff came before Council on Tuesday night. This move comes after Council has voted down several heritage designations in the last few months due to homeowners reporting that the designation was jeopardizing their ability to get or afford home insurance. Councillor Brandon Tozzo spoke to this issue when the motion was up for discussion.
I really worry if we don't get figured out the insurance component of this, I really do worry that there will be a heavy backlash in the public against heritage. I think we already are feeling some of that frustration from the community. When we first got on to council, I didn't hear a single person, and now we have people coming in tears about getting their properties being heritage.
In the very same meeting, Kingston resident Terry Shea came before council asking that the heritage designation on her home be removed, expressing that she would not be able to afford the hike in insurance she claims was brought on by the designation.
I've heard many times designations should not affect insurance premiums. However, this is not true. My home insurance is now unaffordable, which leaves me no choice but to come up with a way to make the impossible possible. I've lived in my home for over 11 years with an annual premium of $4,300, and now I'm faced with choosing a policy of upwards of $20,000 or risk losing my mortgage. My insurance broker and I have been declined by an alarmingly high amount of leading insurance companies over the last 6 to 8 weeks. The Heritage program that drives homeowners into financial hardship does not build community pride. It creates instability, division, and conflict.
The province of Ontario has stated that insurance premiums should not go up as a result of a heritage designation. In her presentation to council, Shea cited the Insurance Bureau of Canada's brochure, Insuring the Living Past, which states that heritage properties can be more expensive to replace due to the layers of bureaucracy and bylaws surrounding repairing and rebuilding, among other factors. According to the National Trust of Canada, the industry is currently in a difficult spot, having to pay out massive claims due to extreme weather events, and is now going to great lengths to minimize any risks it can. They state older buildings, especially designated heritage buildings, appear to have become a target for this approach. While city staff and councillors have been searching for answers to help Shea and others in a similar predicament gain clarity and find a way forward, Councillor Connie Glenn says they have not been able to find clear answers.
What we keep being told is, well, the Ontario Heritage Act says that this isn't going to happen. It's not going to be a problem if you get a designation. But then we have property owner going to renew insurance and facing a skyrocketing rate. And what we can't get a clear answer on from anyone is this really due to the heritage designation or not? Because we've got a game of what I would call hot potato going on here. I don't want the heritage designation to be seen by members of the community as being a negative. But at the moment, that's pretty much what's being experienced.
The motion calls for insurance regulators, insurance industry representatives, and heritage professionals to work together to find solutions to protect heritage properties without unwarranted financial burden on homeowners, and find solutions to regulate the impact of heritage designation on insurance premiums. With unanimous support from Council, the call for clarity and resolution will be sent to the applicable regulatory and industry bodies, with hopes that Heritage and homeowners will no longer have to be in conflict.
What this motion says is we are fed up with Heritage being a scapegoat for increased insurance rates. And it's time that it stopped, and that the province, who has put us in this situation, along with the insurance companies, come together and fix it. We all have to live in the community together. We want people to be able to value Heritage and Heritage properties and live in them, but be able to afford to live in them. So please get together and fix it. That's really what this ask is. We've gone, I think, as far as we can possibly go, and the community, I think, will be supportive of getting this sorted out as much as we will.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that story. Next, I'll be reading a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about the impact the Eastern Ontario drought has had on members of the agricultural community. Drought conditions this summer have meant more than just brown spots on the lawn to rural residents of Eastern Ontario, where getting water is often not as simple as just turning on the tap. The ongoing drought in eastern Ontario is significantly impacting farmers, leading to crop damage, reduced yields, and potential financial losses. Farmers are struggling with heat stress on crops, a lack of sufficient rainfall for proper growth, and an increased workload due to irrigation effects. Some farmers are even forced to let their crops die due to the severity of conditions. Similarly, hobby farmers, gardeners, and even families who depend on wells for water are struggling day to day with the challenge of the drought. According to Agriculture Canada, in July, Eastern Ontario faced some of the driest conditions in central Canada. Many areas saw less than 40% of their normal July rainfall, causing drought zones to spread and new dry pockets to form. The hot, dry months have stressed crops and left more than a third of the region's farmland in drought conditions. According to Canada Weather Stats, July 2025 only saw 18.7 millimeters of rain accumulation. Historically, July in the Kingston area averages 12 days of precipitation with 72.2 millimeters of rain accumulation, and August averages 10 days of precipitation with 57 millimeters of rain. According to Brian Windover of Bayview Farms, the drought is already taking a toll on his family-run farm located on the shores of Hay Bay, a mixed farming operation consisting of hay, beef, soybeans, and wheat. The beans, planted on shallow ground, have turned gray and will not even produce any crop to harvest, he said. The ponds used to water the livestock are also a concern, as water levels are dropping rapidly. Urban dwellers might not appreciate how the drought impacts every aspect of life in the country, not just on farms. Many rural homes get their water from in-ground wells on their property. When the well goes dry, that spells trouble. No water for cooking, drinking, no showers, no laundry, and no flushing toilets. The medium potable water fill station at the A.L. Defoe Water Purification Plant in Napanee is constantly encircled by residents with water tanks on trailers and in trucks. This fill station is intended for filling containers smaller than 4.5 cubic meters or 1,000 gallons. The cost for this service is $2 per 1,000 liters. Users must supply a hose and fittings, which are necessary to connect to the station. Sometimes the wait for water is hours long. On top of dry wells, wildfire is a genuine concern. Napanee resident Landon Savelle has kept up weekly watering of his own lawn out of fear of a grass fire. Quincy Emmons, a fire captain with Stone Mills Township and also the chief executive officer of Fire Rain, shared that Canada is at a level 5, meaning that all fire resources are in use and that firefighters are, quote, at their limit to deal with wildfires. Emmons stated that, quote, fire departments will be initiating mutual aid systems, so in the event of a fire, multiple departments will respond to send water tankers and spread the burden of water resources, minimizing the local impact on water availability. However, Emmons noted, quote, the reality is that if we have a major fire in this area, the provincial and federal agencies are already at maximum capacity. We are close to the breaking point, especially with wildfires burning south of Bancroft and in the Kawartha Lakes region. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Next up, I'll be reading a story from the local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about Mayor John Beddoe's suspension from the Gananoque Police Services Board. The Gananoque Police Services Board has confirmed that Mayor John Beddoe's was suspended from his duties on the board late last year, pending the outcome of an investigation by Ontario's Inspectorate of Policing. In a statement posted to its website last week, the board said Beddoe's suspension began in November 2024 following a formal complaint made directly to the inspectorate. The board did not disclose details of the complaint, citing the ongoing investigation. The board said the inspectorate's findings will be posted publicly once released, both on the provincial agency's website and on the board's own site. On March 4th, council passed a bylaw appointing Councillor Dave Osmond as the alternate council representative on the police board for the remainder of the current term, filling the vacancy created by Beddoe's suspension. The statement marks the first public disclosure of the mayor's removal from the board. The matter came to light during last week's council meeting. The Gananoque Police Services Board said no further information will be provided while the investigation remains active. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Over to the local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJAI-FM, Amherst Island, Ted Evans with a story about a new 10-year Parks and Recreation Master Plan for Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. At their meeting this week, Loyalist Township Council approved their 2024 to 2023 Parks and Recreation Master Plan. According to staff, the plan emphasizes inclusivity, community partnerships, and staffing needs. Estimated costs within the plan total $23.26 million. Public engagement was conducted through various channels, including the township's Engage Loyalist platform. The township heard input from residents, staff, and the Southeast Health Unit. The draft plan was presented to the Committee of the Whole in April and endorsed for final community feedback before returning to Council for final consideration. The plan includes 157 recommendations across programming, facilities, parks, trails, and service delivery. Director of Community and Customer Services with the Township, Lori McFarland, explained how staff and Council will look into recommendations from the plan over time.
We will be looking, you know, at prioritizing based on need and use, avoidance of service redundancy, asset requirement obligations, phased and adaptive executions, and oversight, council oversight and budget alignment. The endorsement of the plan does not necessarily mean that all of the financial recommendations that are here aren't being implemented or being recommended. What it does mean is that anything that has financial implications will have to be looked at through that lens and brought back to council along with every other budget and approved through the regular budget process. And it needs to look at how it fits into our long-term financial plan and all of those key parameters to ensure we're executing it in a responsible financial manner.
Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend noted the importance of the plan going forward.
It's been a long time, and we as council have been a principal driver of seeing this, and we know as council how important our recreation services and programming are to our residents. In the report, the implementation sort of disclaimer and expectations, inevitably, I think, the next incoming council next year will have challenging financial prospects on all sorts of levels, and recreation is no exception to that. But I think it provides a comprehensive picture of certainly the scope of what the kinds of things that we want to see in the township.
Councillor Paul Proderick spoke about the importance of communication between township departments throughout the plan.
I was happy to see the role that Parks and Rec and Culture and the Arts can do together, and I think that's something that's important. Just for streamlining services and not talking in this silo and that silo and not knowing what each other's doing.
Councillor Jake Ennis showed his support for the new master plan.
I think it's an important update to make for the township, and to provide sort of a guiding framework for recreation. I think it's a balanced approach. You know, some of the larger investments are pushed out, so there might be some disappointment there. But I think on the other hand, there's some exciting lower cost, higher impact positive investments in the shorter term that could possibly be made. So I think it's a, balanced approach that council and residents can support, hopefully.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about a new three-year agreement between Base 31 and Quinte Health.
What happens when someone needs critical care as a result of a bad car accident? In Prince Edward County, they are taken to the local hospital, then transported by Orange Air Ambulance to a larger facility, so a helipad is essential in the county. With ongoing construction of the new state-of-the-art hospital, the helipad is closed, but Base 31 Partners has stepped up to provide a helipad on their former World War II airbase property. This ensures emergency air transport services will continue as the hospital is being built. Nancy Parks, Back the Build campaign chairperson, acknowledges the gift-in-kind donation.
Base 31's generous contribution of land for the temporary helipad is another wonderful example of the community spirit that powers our Back the Build campaign. While we look ahead to a new hospital complete with an on-site helipad, this interim solution ensures we continue to provide timely care during the construction phase. Support like this builds momentum, it strengthens our campaign, and brings us closer to a great new county hospital that meets the needs of our community. And thank you for standing with us and helping ensure that we ensure that care is received close to home.
Family doctor and emergency physician Dr. Hayward Stewart speaks of the importance of a helipad.
Actually, sometimes you don't get to hear from us, the nurses in emergency, the doctors in emergency, but you step up to this and provide this helipad means moments that lives can be saved. And when we have major traumas in this area, we have the ability to send in physicians if we have to through Orange and nursing staff, but to be able to get our people out to critical care. And people don't understand how important that is. So you've heard some people say it. As a physician who works in the emergency and representing our crew down there, we are very grateful for your contribution. And hopefully, when our new hospital is built, we're here for all of you. And all our community, but it is very important that we band together as a community and support one another. So we are really gracious of your donation to us, because that is so important every day in what we do.
Asaf Weiss, acting CEO and president of Base 31, responds.
We're delighted to be in this partnership with you. Obviously, we really believe in the long-term prosperity of the county and of the region, and you can't have prosperity without community health, and in this case, capital H health. And so we're really, really pleased to be a part of, making the new hospital a reality. I have to say, as a Milford resident myself, and as you may know, most of our team really are residents here. We are cheering on the construction of the new hospital. We can't wait for it to be established and open. So we're really delighted to be able to support. I think there's some kind of poetic irony to the fact that this is a place of aviation history, and the contribution that we can make in this partnership is to provide medevac access to the skies. So we're really delighted to have the helipad here. And as I say, just really excited to be part of a partnership that helps to build health infrastructure.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the local journalism initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about a Brighton nonprofit hoping to reforest Presque Isle Provincial Park.
A conservation group is seeking to help reforest Presque Isle Provincial Park. The Friends of Presque Isle Park state that reforestation is urgent and needed, as high winds have caused significant damage and downed trees. Dan Riggs, director of grants for the nonprofit group, approached Brighton Municipal Council Monday, wanting support, not financial contributions, as it attempts to secure $50,000 for the project. He explained that emerald ash borer has decimated the ash tree population, as approximately 30% of ash trees make up the park.
You'll see that there's a lot of areas that have no forest canopy, and there's a lot of apparently dead trees. And in fact, there are thousands of dead, dying, and downed trees in Presque Isle. So reforestation is vital for maintaining ecological integrity and species conservation.
Riggs said reforestation contributes to climate change mitigation, as tree canopies provide cooling effect in the area, refuge for migrating species, and enhance the overall aesthetics of the park and user experience. The organization is meeting with a forester with Trees Canada this week to survey the forest and assess the current park situation and to develop a planting plan. While a three-year project slated to begin in May 2026, Friends of Presque Isle Park would need a motion of support from the municipality to strengthen its proposal through the Green Municipal Fund Tree Planting Grant. Brighton Mayor Brian Ostrander said he supports the reforestation efforts.
I think it's a great opportunity to partner with another organization in an area that we know has been devastated from a forestry perspective.
Council passed the motion. The funding application for the project is due by September 18th. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Coming up next, we have CFRC's City of Kingston Traffic Report and Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Public Services and Procurement Canada wishes to advise the public that the LaSalle Causeway will be fully closed to vehicles, cyclists, and pedestrians to allow for the temporary opening of the main marine navigation channel on Sunday, August 24th from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Here are this week's relevant road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Cataraqui Woods Drive, Rosanna to Holden is closed until August 28th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for roundabout upgrades. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Middle Road, Joyceville to Highway 2 is closed until August 22nd from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day to complete culvert relining. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Woodburn Road, Hitchcock to Whitechurch is closed for a contractor to complete culvert relining. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bayridge Drive, Milford to Henderson. Expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure and intersection upgrades. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners. Expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Gardeners Road at Centennial and Creekford. Expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle. Expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead construction. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Avenue, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Avenue. Work includes curb, sidewalk, asphalt milling, and repaving. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper. Expect delays while a contractor completes construction of a new sidewalk and road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users. And Victoria Street in RL Street. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, August 21st, it's going to be a beautiful sunny day here in the city of Kingston. Breezy in the morning, a little bit of cloud, but mostly brilliant sunshine, high of 25. That actually feels like 25. Friday, August 22nd, daytime high of 24 with lots of sun in the forecast. Saturday, August 23rd, it's looking like it's going to be a perfect day for the Queen's football home opener against the Western Mustangs. Daytime high of 26, feeling closer to 27. A slight possibility of rain later in the afternoon, but it should be a beautiful summer Saturday. Sunday, August 24th, mostly cloudy with the possibility of a thunderstorm here in the Kingston region. Daytime high of 24, feeling closer to 25. And to kick off next week, Monday, August 25th, daytime high of 22, 70% chance of rain. Otherwise, sunny throughout the day.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Diane Young, a cover song that Evan Jackson has been playing live for years and that remains a fan favorite for its danceability and chaos. This recorded version reimagines the original through a rockabilly country rock lens, leaning into a reckless energy that's always been there. Though it's a Vampire Weekend song, Evan gets a little bit of Elvis on it, and it's something that you're sure to enjoy. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Diane Young by Evan Jackson on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Hey, really quick question.
Side like a pile of leaves, and I'm going to find some better wheels. 4 or 5 meters, run around the bend, when the government agents surround me again. I'm dying your mom, change your mind, and baby, 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 baby rattles. Out of control, but you're playing a role. Do you think you can go to the 18th hole? Or will you flip-flop the day, the championship, try to go it alone on your own for a bit? Dying your home, change your mind, then baby, 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 right on. Naturally, but you got the look of a Kennedy, so grab the wheel, keep holding the tide, till it's harder than nothing at that cool night. And if dying you won't change your mind, then baby, 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 right on time. Baby, 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 right on. Baby, 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 right on. Baby, 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 right on time.
With Open Mouths, the podcast is hosted by Carnita Lilla, Associate Curator, Art of Africa at Agnes Etherington Art Center. She sits down with artists, musicians, curators, and spoken word poets to discuss the expressions of their practice. She finds out how they found their artistic voice, which life events shaped them, and who their inspirations are. Find new episodes on Digital Agnes, CFRC's website, and on your favorite podcasting platform. Subscribe now and join us for moving and inspiring conversations.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, your campus community radio station, broadcasting to you since 1922.
Sangila.
Kwe.
Why eat beach nak seal?
Tan she.
Tanet e. Negad kakote.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Kwe Nindeluizi Pam Palmeter. Hi, my name is Pam Palmeter, and I'm your host for the Mi'kmaq episodes of Words and Culture. I'm a Mi'kmaq lawyer, professor, and author from Eel River Bar First Nation, which is known in the Mi'kmaq language as Ugbaganjig. And although my First Nation is small, we are one of many other First Nations that make up the larger Mi'kmaq Nation. And our territory is just as big. It includes all of Nova Scotia, PEI, a significant part of New Brunswick, parts of Newfoundland, parts of Quebec, and even Maine. All of that is what's known as Mi'kma'ki, Mi'kmaq territory. And have I already said it's my favorite place in the world? Today I get to talk to the super cool Mi'kmaq duo, Lindsay Denny and Alicia Sapier. Lindsay is the language and cultural coordinator for Pictou Landing First Nation in Nova Scotia. And Alicia is one of Pictou's Mi'kmaq language teachers. And she does a bunch of other cool things like create games. But when I saw their TikTok videos teaching the Mi'kmaq language, I knew I had to invite them to Words and Culture so you could hear all about their really unique and cool work. Metalotio, how are you?
We're good. I'm doing really good today.
Really? Hapnin.
Alicia, I understand that you're fluent in the language. Can you tell me a bit about what you do for the community?
Yes, I teach the language. I do language classes once a week for kids and once a week for adults. And I also started doing virtual online classes as well on Tuesdays. So if people would like to join, they can join on our Mi'kmaq Pictouga web Facebook page.
Wow, is that just for people who belong to Pictou?
Well, mainly our goal is because all of the reservations have their own teachers for their community, and same with us. And we have, our goal is mainly for our community, but we don't discriminate. We would love to teach as many people as we can. But because of other reservations having their own language teachers, and the difference between dialect as well would have to be something people would have to look at as well too, right? So like what we teach here might not be sounding the same as another reservation, you know?
That's so true, because I've heard a big difference. Like my reserve, Ugbaganjig Eel River Bar First Nation in New Brunswick, what the Mi'kmaq, sometimes the sayings that they have or the way they spell the language is a bit different than what I see in Nova Scotia. Do you see that too?
Yes. Okay, for example, the spelling part, I know we have the word wises. We spell W-A-I-S-I-S, but I've noticed in Elsibuktuk, they spell it W-I-S-I-S. So there's an example of a spelling. And another example for the speech part. For basement, for downstairs, the big cove, they would say ebuneg. But for us, for us, we say goeg. And like another example would be store. Big covers will say magusang, we say Masunogom. So there's that difference in the dialects, right?
I wonder how much of an influence French has had on the language, because magasin is the word for store in French. And so the word they used in El Sebukduk or Big Cove sounds very close to the French word.
There's a lot of French influence in our language, actually. One example would be plate. Some people will call it deptahan, or another way to say it is l'assiette. And that's almost like a French.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing the French do influence is, okay, so one example is we have moose, right? Mm-hmm. And when the French people came, they had cows. So when the French brought their cows, we call them wenjidiam, the French moose. Wenj, like the French, wenj, and moose, wenjidiam. So it's a French moose.
I didn't know that.
Yes. So there's another influence. Shoes, I hear, is another influence because they're called wenjusanank. The French people brought them, wenj, wenjusanank.
Okay, all right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I always wonder, because I'm not fluent. I know very little Mi'kmaq, but when I worked in the federal government, I had to become bilingual in French and learn French, you know, for the first time. And then I was like, wait a second, I think I recognize some of these words in Mi'kmaq. I was surprised at the number of Mi'kmaq words that I heard that resembled French words for the same thing. So you're a Mi'kmaq language teacher, which is so amazing. Thank you for that work that you do. When I was reading your bio, it said that you do, like, you create resources and you even design games. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I'm working on a Jenga game, conversational Jenga, and that would be like little board that goes going to be, you know how you get your Jenga, but you're going to be able to have three different colors to make three different sentences using the Jenga, like that. Like I come up with little ideas like that.
I love that, because you as, you know, language instructors and educators and people who are dedicated to cultural revitalization, we all know that the best way to cement learning is, you know, not just practice and auditory, but visual, but it's also like active. So playing games would also help cement that. And I think that's such a good idea. I didn't even know that there was people out there doing that. Like, I heard that there's people out there trying to make like video games or whatever. I'm not very good at video games, but I could do these other ones. And Lindsay, like, I heard you describe yourself on one of the TikToks as a Mi'kmaq language learner because you're not yet fluent. What inspired you to take up the role as language and cultural coordinator? Is it because you were on this journey?
So growing up, I didn't hear much of the language around me. And once I became a mom, I realized how important it was for me to reconnect so I could pass it on to my son. He's two. And that really pushed me to learn and get involved in revitalizing the language here in our community. Because a lot of people my age, so I'm 31, and a lot of us grew up not speaking the language. So it was really important to me to try and learn and get that back, right? Because it's such a beautiful language, and I really, really wish I could speak it. But I'm learning new words each day and practicing as much as I can.
Well, that's inspiring for me, because I think about, you know, there's a generation or two of us who didn't learn the language. Like, even though my grandmother and my family and my father, when they were all living on the res and he was younger, they were all, that's their first language. That was the only language they knew. But then, you know, when, you know, everything that happened in society and with the government and colonization, he was like, don't speak the language. You're not going to learn the language. I couldn't pass it on to my kids. They're in their 30s now. But now that I have baby grandkids, I want to do nothing more than to keep learning, like, because I've been on a slow journey. And I'm just thinking, thank goodness there are people like you two out there making it fun and interesting and non-intimidating. You make it welcoming and inviting. And do you think that that makes a huge difference in whether people feel brave enough to come in into a language class?
Oh, absolutely. You know, as a learner myself, it's been a slow but meaningful journey. And, you know, we just want to help others, and we want to create a safe space for learners. And, you know, we want to make language fun, accessible. But yeah, I feel like that's definitely made a difference.
I had no choice. Growing up as a kid, my family would get upset if they were to hear me speak a word of English. I would be smacked across the head. Or told, get the heck out of my house. You're going to speak that language in here. Dali, they'll be like, Dali Sindabugagil. I don't understand you. Manastunno, Dali Singil. If I were to speak English, they'll be like, what are you speaking? I don't understand you. So that's how I was able to hold my language. My family wouldn't allow. I'm 41 years old. My family did not allow me to speak English in the home at all whatsoever. My Bloj family, my Google family, yeah, they speak terrible English. That's the only reason why I have my fluency. It's because of them. And then plus, I grew up with it in school as well, right? My teachers were Mi'kmaq. My mom's Mi'kmaq. So I had no choice.
I can't even imagine what it would have been like to grow up only speaking Mi'kmaq. Imagine getting into trouble for speaking English. That's some hardcore resistance on the colonial push to wipe out our languages. And I don't know if this Mi'kmaq musician grew up speaking his language, but I certainly know he can sing it. Check out Morgan Tony with the Mi'kmaq Honor Song. Singer-songwriter Morgan Tony with the Mi'kmaq Honor Song. What I really love is that it's the two of you with very different experiences and in different positions, one fluent, one not, one who grew up with it, one who didn't. And you're both trying to teach the Mi'kmaq language to other people who are in a variety of these similar situations. And that means a lot to people like me, that there are people out there that are doing this and trying to reach us in a different way. And one of those things, Lindsay, I always wanted to ask, because, you know, I love your TikToks. I think you both are a hoot. I look forward to your TikToks every morning, especially the one that you did on the bloopers. Every blooper, every cut made me laugh harder. And I was like, I'm going to pee my pants. This is...
What's the way to go?
Questions before I go on from here. Great. I really understood that well.
One.
Quay.
And Alicia, I have to ask you, How do you keep a straight face during some of these things? Because I am dying. I mean, how do you do it?
I just got to shake it off and turn around for a split second while it's still there.
Okay, well, Lindsay, are you kind of the video director of all these TikToks?
Yes. Yeah, so coming into this role as a non-speaker and a learner, I was like, what can I bring to the table to help with language revitalization? And I was like, you know what? So because we were having a hard time, we did, the first thing we did was do language classes, right? Because that's what the community wanted. We did put out a survey and we presented it at the AGA in our community here back in November, where we asked community members, you know, what did they want? And a lot of them did say they wanted language classes, online resources, apps, one-on-one sessions, language videos. So I was like, perfect. That's what I'm going to take control of, because I was already on TikTok beforehand and none of my coworkers were really familiar with social media and TikTok. So I was like, you know what? I'll start creating videos. And
when I was a nervous wreck.
Sorry. Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. That first
time. You believe that language is a key component of identity, and revitalizing it strengthens the community's connections to its culture. It promotes pride and it ensures that future generations understand and appreciate their cultural roots. Glusuahan Minyu Wijit Giskuk. Which means Mi'kmaq word of the day. And the Mi'kmaq word of the day is Giptigewigus, which translates to frost moon. And in the Mi'kmaq calendar, Giptigewigus is the moon that corresponds to the time when rivers begin to freeze over.
Yeah, her growth. As we did each video, like she was really shy in the beginning, but you know, she got more comfortable as we posted each video. That's why I took on that role, was because that's what I was good at, was editing.
She's great
and TikTok
at.
And, it's been really fun.
It's so good. Like, what made you think to use TikTok to teach Mi'kmaq? Were you trying to target like the younger generation, or was it just because native TikTok is on TikTok? Like, what made you think to use TikTok versus, say, YouTube, a big long video on YouTube?
So when I was initially hired, I was actually initially hired as the youth mentor. So my focus was on the youth, and, they're on TikTok, and I wanted to make language fun, accessible. And I find now we have a shorter attention span. So I wanted to make our videos really quick, but also gain a lot from just that short segment of language. So we're working on commands right now. So we need to recruit more people for our video. So that's how we got. So some of them were a little bit uncomfortable filming, but I'm so glad we finally got them on camera, because they're like, there's no way I'm ever going on TikTok. You are not going to record me. And I'm like, you know what? Okay, fine. I respect that. But yeah, they got more comfortable with it and were able to be in our videos, and it's awesome.
And that's our future plan, is to have the whole community members involved in making our videos sometime in the near future too, right?
Yes, so, absolutely.
Like the other day, we needed another person for a video here. We didn't have it. So I had to go down to the gym and we had Sabrina volunteer. I said, we need a person. Anyone here not busy can come help us. Sabrina's like, okay. So she came in and helped us, right?
Yeah, and
so,
she's a community member.
Yeah, so, she's from, yeah.
Yeah, so it was great.
Yeah. Well, what I really appreciate about it is it's not all formal and stuffy and like what you would expect if it was like, say, a university class, and it's just so serious. Like the fact that you can make mistakes, or someone's trying not to laugh, or you're doing it over again, or they're walking in very awkward. It's like, this is so much fun. It makes me want to learn all of that stuff. And Alicia, one thing I wanted to ask you, some of the things you share on these TikToks is the different forms of a word. If it's you know, a command for one person or two people or three people. Can you just give us an example and what the difference is between those three words? Like if it was to, you know, get out of here or come back or sit down or whatever, but what the difference is when it's one person, two people, three people.
Yeah, they're kind of like pronouns, neen, gil, negum. So one is like, one neen is me, or what, like you, gil, like would be you, or negum would be them, right? So that's what I'm trying to teach people, the difference between like, between neen and Lindsay, gudinia, daluisin.
Daluisi, Lindsay.
And I would say like, daluisid. That would mean like, what's their name? So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the one between me and her, and then there's one between them.
That's amazing. And because there's things that I forget from taking, I think it was Peggy Clement from Elsa Booktok who had taught me like years and years ago, and that they're like, it's the same word, but it takes a different form if you're commanding one person to do it versus two people to do it. And I always thought that's so interesting because you know how just generally in our community, sometimes we just use the same word. Like I used to always say, Wallalan, whether I'm saying Wallalan to one person or whether it was to a room of people or six people. And then an elder said, well, actually, there's a difference if it's one person or another person. So Alicia, what is the difference? Like for any listeners who don't know the difference, when you hear someone say, well, Alan, they know that.
I have a great example. Actually, I have a really great example. Something my kid's father would do. He would tell me, oh, your nidab is here. Your nidab is here. And I'm like, my nidab? No. Yes, it's my friend, but you're supposed to say your gidab is here because so Nidab, my friend, Gidab, your friend, Widab, their friend. So he would always tell me, your Nidab is here. And I'm like, no, you're supposed to say your Gidab is here. Your friend is here. So there's that Neen, Gil, Negum.
Okay, so in the context of, say, Wallalan, I'm saying that to one person, but if I'm saying it to, say, six people, thanking all of them, what would be the word?
Wallalio.
It's one person saying it to two or more people.
Yeah.
Okay, what if it was a family, our family is thanking another family?
Wallaliag.
Like, thank you from us.
Yeah, thank you from us. Like, if I was to thank all you guys from us, Wallalieg.
Okay. So, Wallalan, Wallalio, Wallalieg.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's how we usually finish our TikTok videos. Yeah.
Like, I know sometimes it's easier to learn a language if you're in it. Like, if, say, you're living in a community or in a family and you're immersion, I guess, fully immersed in it and you just kind of have to learn it trial by fire. But do you think that people who don't have an opportunity to be fully immersed in the language can still learn it enough to, say, be conversational or understand people?
Oh, most definitely. I believe you can, because there are single phrases that you can say. You don't have, like, even just the smallest amount of Mi'kmaq you can speak is, I would say, would be a great, great improvement. Because any little bit of Mi'kmaq you know is great. And start small. Just say thank you, Wallalin, Namultis, Midaulain, Gesalol. Like those simple words, they're meaningful. Like Gesalol, I love you. Like my son, he works here at the store and he says, Wallalin, Namultis. And when I walk in there, he tells me that, all right, Namultis, mom, Gesalol. Like, you know, simple little phrases. And that's where it can start.
Okay, well, I want to ask both of you, for Mi'kmaq youth, say, whether they live on reserve or off reserve, what is your message to them about the language? And like, say, assume that they're non-fluent and they really want to learn the language. What's your advice or guidance for them about what they could do?
Don't be shy. Do your best. We're here to help. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to make fun of people myself. I know that discourages people, so I do my best. Keep writing, just be proud of your language and you'll be able to learn it easily. Yeah. Repetition. Don't forget.
Be proud of who you are.
Yes.
Yeah. And every word matters.
Yeah. Even if you can't speak a full sentence, if you can just say one simple, like, Gesalul, I love you, you know, that's a phrase right there, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, we'll just be walking around everywhere. Gesalul.
Gesalul, no multes. Like, see you again.
Yeah.
That was Lindsay Denny and Alicia Sapier from Pictou Landing First Nation Mi'kmaq Language Team. Be sure to follow them on TikTok as PLFN Language Team. They left us with some very important advice. Don't be shy. Do your best. Be proud of your language. Be proud of who you are. And every word matters. What an incredible way to end this Mi'kmaq language series on words and culture. Actually, I don't want this series to end. Hey, producer, can we just keep this going? Here I thought I was just going to host another show, but instead, I've been educated, empowered, and inspired to continue on with my own Mi'kmaq language learning journey. Everyone I've had the honor to talk to, Jarvis Gugu, Michelle Sillaboy, Jeremy Dutcher, Cheryl Maloney, Bernie Francis, and in this final episode, Lindsay Denny and Alicia Sapier. Every single one of them taught me something new. But they all had something in common. Not only did they all encourage me to continue learning the language of our ancestors, but they all agreed it can be done. I can become fluent and pass it on to my grandkids. They also taught me that the cultural context of our language is just as important as the words themselves. They also taught me that it's not our fault if we are not fluent in our traditional indigenous languages. Colonial laws, policies, and practices over hundreds of years worked really hard to erase us, our cultures, and our languages. But guess what? We're still here. We're still speaking our languages, and we're inspiring others to join us on that journey to learn our languages, the languages of our ancestors. And for me, that's Mi'kmaq. Next time on Words and Culture, I'm handing it over to legendary broadcaster, the incredible Sheila Rogers. Sheila will be bringing you all things Métis and talk about her own journey about connecting to her culture and language. Kualalio ohodetut. Thank you, friends, for listening and supporting Words and Culture. I'm your host, Pam Palmiter. Namultis. See you again.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Hausin Dang King Sam.
Maltis.
Ninuis Ahaha Miku Kwakwal.
Kachunautano.
Wapamatin Mina.
On Saturday, August 23rd, Gales Game Day returns to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Yes! I love football!
Tune in at 2:45 p.m. for the Grad Club pregame show ahead of the scheduled 3 p.m. kickoff for the 100th game between your Queens Gales and the hated Western Mustangs.
This is electric. Is unprecedented. This is Queens football on CFRC.
Queens
Parkinson's Kingston is a student-led club dedicated to raising awareness, fundraising, and supporting those affected by Parkinson's disease in both the Queens and Kingston communities. On September 6th, join Queens Parkinson's Kingston for the 2025 Parkinson Canada Super Walk, taking place at Lake Ontario Park and running from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Learn more by reaching out to QPK at clubs.queensu.ca and following Queens Parkinson's Kingston at queens4pd.kingston on Instagram. Visit The Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7,